Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Previously on The Rundown with Peter Bromka.
Run fast because you can. And I always come back to that in those later stages of the marathon, which is just to say, like, you're capable of running fast. Do that. And as things are getting really, 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 really hard, and you think you could, like, you're sort of extrapolating, like, if it's this hard now, it's only going to get harder. Trying to return to that mantra of just, like, do everything you can right now. Just run fast because you're capable of running fast. Don't overcomplicate it.
On this episode of The Rundown, I spoke with one of the most seasoned ultra runners we've had on the show to date, Ryan Sands. Ryan currently holds the fastest known time running through the Great Himalayan Trails, has won major trail races in all seven continents, and does not shy away from adventure runs either. Most recently, he ran 100 miles on a 100 meter loop around his house. Absolutely wild, but he loves it, and that's what matters, right? Can't wait to share his story with you. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to our weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the run community, hear about exclusive events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Visit iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. This week, I want to share some thoughts and feelings about everything going on these days. I've been hesitant to share or post anything on behalf of The Rundown because I wasn't quite sure what to say or how to say it. Personally, I sat back and listened, and listened some more. I was brought up and was raised in a predominantly white neighborhood in Canada. I was surrounded by white people for the better part of my life, never had to face any of the challenges people of color face every day, and have faced for hundreds of years. I was taught to treat everyone equally, no matter the color of their skin, and in a way, that's made me naive to what's actually going on in the world, until now. We should have acted sooner, listened more, and pushed for change much, much earlier. It's not too late to learn and be part of the solution. On The Rundown, we want to speak to all runners everywhere, but to date, we've only heard from a few people of color. We want to be better. Going forward, you can expect to see and hear more diversity in our guests. It's how we can show up, amplify their voices, and learn from their experiences. It's only a small step, we know, but a step in the right direction. We'll continue to support, learn, and listen, and we hope you'll do the same. Make sure to check the show notes for links to news, information, and educational material about the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. So during this time with race cancellations and like social distancing, we all try and find creative ways of running and training. And my next guest actually did a 100-miler around his house, and the loop was 100 meters, and it was about 4,500 meter of elevation, which is quite a feat, and I don't know many people who have done that. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show Ryan Sands.
Hey, Justin. Yeah, great to be on the show. And yeah, looking forward to chatting.
For sure. And all the way from South Africa, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, quite a big difference in, you're basically on the other side of the world.
Exactly. But it's quite fun to chat with runners all over the world. And we're, you know, trying to broaden our scope a little bit and talk with different runners to see like how training differs and how they enjoy training in their part of the world. And it's I actually spoke to a trail runner from there for another podcast that I was hosting, Emily Hoggett.
Okay.
Yeah. And she actually won a 100-mile race close to home here. So and I'm in Montreal, Canada, so Yeah, I was quite interested. But I always like to start. I mean, I opened up with that crazy adventure that you did in quarantine. Can you tell us a bit about that and like why you chose to do that?
Yeah, I guess probably is a bit of a stupid idea. I think it all started on the 1st of April being April Fool's Day. I put out a post on Instagram saying today is a good day to run 100 miles in my garden. And I guess just anyone that knows me, I'm definitely not one for running around a track or kind of doing garden laps, even during quarantine or lockdown. I didn't actually do that much running. Just, I don't know, running around in circles, just like, yeah, it just seemed a bit too much for me. Once I put that post out there, it just got me thinking, just like, geez, I didn't actually know if mentally I could actually run 100 miles in circles. Like, I think physically I thought it was possible. It's just like mentally just could I actually do it? And it just got me thinking. And we had like 3 weeks of lockdown, and then that got extended by another 2 weeks. And then I was just like, stuff it. Let me do something. I was starting to feel a bit guilty about not doing too much running. So I thought, well, at least if I run 100 miles, I can take a few days easy afterwards. So I actually only fully decided a few days before actually doing it that I was in fact going to do it. And like I said, I guess if you'd asked me a few hours or a few days afterwards what I thought about it, I would definitely say it's a stupid idea and probably still say it's a stupid idea. But I'm kind of glad I did it in a way and learned a lot about myself. And like you said, like how you called it an adventure, I definitely see it as an adventure. I guess it's not your average adventure, like kind of going out into the unknown. But I guess kind of running around your house, you definitely, I suppose, go into a few unknowns anyway.
For sure. And I guess, you know, unlike your trail races all over the world or ultra distance running all over the world, there is that unknown. But around the house, it gets quite familiar quickly. Like, what does that do to you mentally?
Yeah, I think like the hardest thing mentally was running around and around in circles and basically like running straight past your bedroom like every 108 or 109 meters, and then having to like run past your dining room table, which was my aid station, which is awesome to have an aid station every 100 plus meters. But at the same time, it's just like you can never get into like I could never get into any kind of like rhythm or zone. Like when you're running a trail race like Western States or Leadville, or kind of like you're out there like on your own and you can really get into your own headspace and focus, where with this it was quite tricky. It was amazing to have my wife and son around for support, but at the same time, like seeing them the whole time was just like, you know, definitely kind of broke my mental focus. So that was quite tough. And then also just going around and around in circles was just so like kind of you just don't cover any distance. It just at times feels like you're running on the spot. And it was much slower going than what I expected, to be honest. I thought I would get it done, to be perfectly honest, in about 18 hours. And it ended up being about 26 hours thing. So it was very, very slow going. As you mentioned, there was quite a bit of elevation. I actually think I undercalculated that kind of, I got up my house plans afterwards and realized, I was probably closer to about 6,000 meters of elevation gain because I was running up my entrance stairs. There's a lot of concrete. So, just the elevation wasn't always picking up. But, pretty stoked I actually got it done. But mentally, it was tough. Also, going from light to dark. So, the, like, final night and the early morning, I'd kind of run, like, every 50 meters I'd go from like running inside like through my house and down my entrance stairs, which the entrance stairs are like a white cement, which is very bright with the white light, to going into like pitch darkness. And actually that really like messed up my eyes, and I actually started getting quite disorientated. And even for like 2 or 3 weeks afterwards, like when I'd look down at the ground, I felt a bit dizzy. So that there were like a number of kind of external elements that definitely started to affect me that I didn't take into account beforehand.
That's interesting, right? It's like it's something you're almost doing for fun just to pass the time, and then it creates like other challenges, like you're saying, which you might not have expected to see, you know, out there. I just want to go back to the beginning of you growing up. You grew up in South Africa, I take it, and so what was that like, and were you athletic as a kid?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I kind of have grown up in Cape Town, South Africa, my whole life. So, I guess relatively spoiled here with in terms of like the outdoors. I grew up living on the back slopes of Table Mountain. So, the mountain's always been there for me. But actually, as a kid and a teenager, I spent a lot more time playing rugby, which is a really big sport here. And then in my latter years at school and university, actually surfed a lot. I was never really like running all the mountains that intrigued me. And it was only really like last year at university, I ran an out of town marathon with some friends and kind of finished it on very little training. But that was kind of when the running bug bit, just that, I guess, the feeling of fulfillment and actually going out and achieving something felt pretty cool. And coming back to Cape Town, I joined a local running club and a lot of the guys were pretty big onto trail running. And before I knew it, I was just kind of spending more and more time in the mountains. So yeah, that was back in 2006. So that was kind of basically when I started running. I'd only say I started running seriously probably more like 2007 and kind of 2008 was when I did my first ultra, the Gobi Desert Race. So yeah, I was definitely like running's not something I kind of aspired to at school or kind of didn't run that, like do that much kind of athletics or kind of cross country. As I say, I've always been an outdoor person and fairly active. But it's been pretty cool over the last 13 or 14 years to have, kind of been to the places I've been and done some pretty cool things.
What were some early struggles that you had? Because like you said, you did a marathon, very little training. I was kind of similar. I did a 10K and then I moved up to the half with very little training. And I remember it hurting like hell. But what were some early struggles that you faced and what did you connect with running to make you want to continue?
Yeah, I guess for me, like, I think naturally I've always been like an all or nothing person. And so I mentioned I did a marathon on relatively little training and then came back and got into like trail running and did a couple of 20 to 35K trail races in Cape Town. And then I think it was one weekend, I was kind of like Googling extreme races and up popped the Four Deserts website and I saw Dean Panazes was running it and I just read his book and I was like, flip, this is too good to be true. Like, let me just enter. So I kind of entered without giving it too much thought. To be perfectly honest, I didn't actually even know where the Gobi Desert was when I kind of first paid the entry fee and entered. It just sounded like a cool adventure. And I think for me, that's what intrigues me the most about kind of running and trail running is the adventure. I think for me, like, I enjoy racing, but for me, like, kind of trail running is more than that. And I still want to be that old dude kind of cruising around the mountain. I never want to like over race that I lose my love for trail running. Going back to the Gobi Desert Race, I kind of jumped into that and basically had to kind of train for a 250-kilometer self-supported race with like very little experience and also kind of jumping from doing I think I'd done two road marathons by then and a couple of 20 to 35K trail races. So it was a massive jump up in training for me. And I just thought, like, cool, just try run as much as you can. Every spare second you have, just run. And I got injured quite quickly, got a bit of ITB. And then after that, actually signed up with a coach. And he gave me a much more kind of structured training plan. But I think that training was that was like the first time I'd actually really done like proper training. And I remember a couple of times, once or twice, actually phoning my mom from Table Mountain. I just literally collapsed on the side of the trail. Like, I just can't run anymore. Just trying to get myself used to like running like consecutive days with tired legs. So I think that was like really tough, just trying to just kind of get your body conditioned for that. And it was something I just wasn't like used to. So that was definitely a big kind of shock to the system. But I think for me, I've always enjoyed the the mental challenge and just kind of overcoming it and getting it done. And then also just, I guess, with like the Gobi Desert race, just trying to train for like extreme heat. So I remember kind of wearing two or three jackets and kind of running through my local town and people looking at me like, what the hell are you doing? And so, yeah, there were a couple of like really interesting experiences. But I think for me, as I say, like, I was just super excited about this like wild adventure to the Gobi Desert. But at the same time, I am naturally fairly competitive. I think especially with myself, and I just wanted to make sure that I was going to kind of give it my best shot and train as best as I could. I think actually a few weeks before the race, I promised myself that after the race, I was going to throw my running shoes away. But I think after doing something like that, I was actually, that kind of made me realize more than ever, like, this is actually really cool. I want to do more of this.
Wow. What a jump though, to 250K. Like, I've been running for like, 10 years now, and I've gotten up to the most I've done in a race was 65, and the most I've ran, just like I did a charity thing, was 70K. But like, I have no interest in doing 100 miles, and I have friends that do it and who are around me, and I just, it just blows my mind. Like, it's crazy that you jump from, you know, not that much distance to a lot of distance. What was going on maybe in your life at that time, at the same time that you were training, and what did training look like for you?
Yeah, so it was actually like, I'd actually just left a university and started a full-time job. So it was actually pretty crazy in terms of, literally, I was kind of going to work, kind of finishing work and running and sleeping and basically repeating that. But I think like kind of subconsciously with like wanting to enter something like the Gobi Desert was that, I think maybe like things that felt like a little bit like overwhelming, like kind of being at school and then university. I guess you're still a student there and things are pretty carefree. And then all of a sudden you're working this 9-to-5 job, and I kind of felt like I was being forced to grow up. So I think kind of just like kind of entering this crazy race and this wild adventure like enabled me just to kind of, I think just kind of get back to almost that, like, I wouldn't say entirely carefree nature, but just kind of getting out there and doing something cool. Training was tough. Obviously, training for a multi-day event, I would say, is very different to like a 100-miler in terms of just your long runs. Like for me, my main sessions were getting in like I try and get in 4 days of back-to-back long runs. And when I say long runs, they were like kind of 25 to 35 kilometers. I wouldn't really do too much longer than that, whereas I guess for a 100-miler you're getting in some 50-mile kind of training runs. So Because a multi-day race happened over consecutive days, I was more just trying to focus on getting my legs used to running on tired legs, but then also at the same time getting used to running with a heavy backpack, because it was a fully self-sufficient race. So that was quite a challenge. Like, you'd have about 10 kgs on your back, and just getting used to running with weight on your shoulders, which definitely was something that took a bit of time to get used to.
What goes in that bag?
Yeah, just basically everything you need to survive. So you do get given rations of water at the various aid stations and when you finish on a daily basis, and they give you like a tent that sleeps 10 people. So you get assigned to a tent. You have to have all your own, like a sleeping bag, a sleeping mat if you want one. I never took a sleeping mat just to try and keep weight down, kind of toothbrush if you want to take one, and basically food that you need for the 7 days. And then also like some emergency gear. And they have quite a long list of mandatory gear that you have to take. So yeah, you basically got to be fully self-sufficient unless something seriously goes wrong.
What are you eating? What are you putting for food and fuel in your bag? Like, what's your go-to stuff?
Yeah, so like in just was quite a while ago, so I'm trying to remember it all. But yeah, there was like a lot of stuff, like using stuff like Smash, freeze dried meals. You could get them. Also stuff like 2 minute noodles, like Parmesan mm-hmm. cheese and kind of some olive oil. So a lot of stuff like quite high in like, or as high as possible in calories, that you could carry as little weight and get the most calories in. Also found I drank quite a lot of soups and stuff like that, just to, again, soups don't weigh a lot, but you can get in quite a lot of, salts and stuff like that. So, yeah. And then basically you break kind of each day down, like you kind of have a separate Ziploc bag for each day, and you just kind of work out what you're going to need for a daily basis. And then obviously while you're out running, you kind of, I guess, use the kind of general kind of gels or whatever you want to take along the run.
Cool. So are the days broken up like evenly, or is it like one day's more than the next?
Yeah, so the like general distance was the first 4 days you'd run about a marathon, and then on the fifth day you normally have they call it the long stage, and that ranges anything from I've run as little as 65 km up to 105 km. So it just varies on the course, and then the sixth and final stage. It's generally of like a fairly short stage, anything from like 8 to 20 km. So that is the general way things run. But then also, I guess it depends. I've done a race where the long stage is on the second day. So, quite interesting. I think having the long stage on the fifth day or the fifth stage is generally the best. You're kind of able to get into it. I remember when we had the long day on the second stage, it was quite brutal. Just because you're always, after the first day, you're always feeling quite kind of stiff and sore, and you're kind of adjusting. And it's normally kind of the third, fourth day that your body just starts to kind of get into a rhythm and start to adjust.
Hmm. And so after that race, like, what was the feeling when you finished, and what were your thoughts after that? Because you said you were going to throw away the shoes, but clearly you didn't.
Yeah, like just, I think going into the race, like I mentioned, I'm naturally a competitive person. I was hoping for a top 20. I ended up winning the race, which was like a dream come true and like completely like surreal. And definitely, I think for me, kind of, as I said, that's where I realized like, flip, I really wanted to do this more. Like chatting to Dean Cornazes was doing the race and chatting to him a lot, and I think I learned a lot from him. So yeah, it was like pretty surreal, but it as I said, it made me realize like I wanted to do more of this. Maybe not necessarily as a professional athlete, just do more of it. And also it was quite weird. Like I remember taking the bus back from the finish back to, I think it was Kashgar, like the major city in China where the hotel was, where we were kind of going back to before we would fly out. And one, like, I just had this like epic high of winning this race, saying like outside of my wildest dreams. But then like internally, I was just like feeling like so empty. It was just like what now? I'd spent like literally devoted like 6 months of my life to training for this race, and as I mentioned, it was literally any spare time I had was training and putting energy into this race, or researching, or kind of going to buy nutrition and figure stuff out. So it was really like kind of quite weird, and like almost like a little bit depressed. So as I say, I think that was like when I realized that I definitely want to do more of this.
I think that's something that's common too in endurance sports in particular. I know I've done a couple Ironmans myself, and it's not the same as what you're doing, but it's still like a long distance race, but you put like months of training in, and then you finish the race, and then you go into this depression. I remember asking my coaches, like, I really feel like down now after the race, and like, what the hell? Like, why am I feeling this way? I should feel so good. But it's because like, it's just like everything's leading up to that point.
No, exactly. So yeah, it was pretty tough. But as you say, I think I've even experienced that now after some focusing on bigger races. And as I said, as you mentioned, had some friends do Ironman, and even, I guess, like training hard for a marathon. Once you've kind of gone out there and done it, it's like, what next?
You mentioned Dean Karnatsis. He's a legend in the sport and still running to this day. But so you read his book and then got inspired to run this desert race. And so did you start to pick his brain even before the race, or did you just get to meet him at the race and then that's where you got to talk to him and pick his brain a little?
Yeah, so it's actually more just during the race. I got to spend a bit of time with him and talk to him. And then after the Gobi race, I actually did the Sahara Desert race, which was later that year. And then he was there again. I think it was actually during the Sahara that, again, that race was going really well for me. And I kind of wanted to potentially look at doing this as a professional athlete, professionally. And I think just chatting to Dean, like, he was just, yeah, massive in his advice and like help he gave me. He was kind of pioneered kind of the sport in many ways, and was one of the first guys to go fully professional.
What's one of the biggest lessons that he's taught you?
Yeah, I think at the time, I'm trying to remember offhand exactly what he said. I think he said, like, winning races doesn't get you sponsors. And I was a little, like, taken aback at the time, and like, kind of, what do you mean? Because I just won the Sahara race, and I think it was only like maybe a few hours later, or kind of back on the plane back home, that it actually sunk in. And it was one of the, like, something that was like a kind of penny drop moment for me, and it made me realize that, like, you can, like, win as many races as you want, but, like, kind of how our sport has evolved is you also need to be an all-round athlete, and, like, yeah, you need to be approachable and, like, social media and like, kind of, yeah, I guess, like, an all-round person, and kind of see yourself as a brand in a way, in order to get sponsors and to kind of make a living out of the sport and do stuff like corporate talks and motivational talks and stuff like that. It's not just about kind of waking up, going for a run, having breakfast, and kind of repeating that for lunch and dinner. I think that was like really important for me to realize from a kind of early age.
Yeah, the performance is one thing, but like you say, like, for example, I'm not winning races, but I have a couple sponsors that I really appreciate and everything, and it's all about being personable and being able to talk to people, connecting with community, and all that other stuff. So now you won two races out of that. It's a series, right? This is the four desert series, so you won two of them, and then now you're like, well, might as well go for the next two. Is that kind of like how it went for you, or? What, like, did you think now you won back to back? So what was your thought process? And like, you said you were in shock after the first one, because you kind of came out of nowhere, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it's, as I say, like it was, so basically did the first one purely on my own, and then came back home and managed to pick up one or two sponsors to get back to the Sahara. And then I was still like working quite a crazy busy job, and then it was the following year, so it was only every 2 years that they had the last desert race, which was the final kind of race in the series in the Antarctica. So that was happening kind of that same year, but I couldn't get sponsorship for that, so I rolled that over to 2010. And actually in 2009 I did like two or three kind of completely different races, one being the Jungle Marathon, which is also a multi-stage race through the Amazon jungle, and then a race in Namibia and one or two other events. So it was in 2010 that I've completed the series and did the Atacama Desert Race, and then the last desert, which was at the end of 2010. So yeah, I spaced it out over two years or two and a half years. It was pretty like kind of cool to finally get to Antarctica and kind of experience that.
What was that like for you?
Yeah, it was completely different. you actually we kind of lived off a boat, and nothing was like set in terms of we were on a boat, and when the weather was good, we'd suddenly like dock or kind of get close to land, and then kind of jump on a Zodiac, and basically on the ship or the boat we're on, they would literally give us an hour's notice that the stage was starting. So you suddenly get like over the loudspeaker, cool, you've got an hour to get ready to jump on the Zodiacs to go and start stage three, which the stage is. The one stage worked out to be about 105 Ks, and kind of some of the shorter ones where we got cut short due to weather was about 20 Ks. So, yeah, it was just like really hard to plan, like mentally as well, because like you never know what to expect. And when they say kind of also that the stages weren't set, so we'd just basically go out there and as run as much as we could while the weather was good, and we'd actually run a series of laps just because the weather was so extreme that if the weather closed in, we couldn't kind of be stuck out in the middle of nowhere. And then those laps also varied. So like some laps were as short as 1.5 kilometers, like basically a mile long, and others were up to 20 kilometers. So yeah, it was pretty crazy. And then just I guess being on a boat, and just yeah, it's like some really strong runners got really bad seasickness. One guy literally couldn't kind of get out of bed the whole time. So there were just like, yeah, I guess so many external elements, but yeah, pretty cool to experience that.
Unbelievable. It sounds like quite an experience, you know? And how do you like, so how do you train for that? Like, how do you train for these extreme weather conditions in where you're living?
I think the main thing is just, yeah, I've always like each race try to focus on the specific kind of challenges of that race, whether it be extreme heat or the distance of the race or crazy big mountains or altitude. And I think there's like focusing on those challenges, there's always ways to find ways to train. Like also being quite lucky to work with Professor Tim Noakes. So when I ran the Sahara Desert race, I actually trained in an environmental chamber, which is basically like a single car garage that you can control the heat and humidity in there. And I ran in a treadmill. So I do like two or three sessions a week in that. And I think that like they were quite short sessions, but just really good to physically get your body used to kind of running in the heat. But I think for me, it was like really big mentally that I remember in the Sahara when it got to like kind of, I think the one day was like 52 degrees. It was just like stupid, stupid hot. That's, yeah, 52 degrees Celsius. You felt like you could hardly breathe. But because I trained in the environmental chamber, I almost felt like I could kind of go through that. I was used to those sensations, and like mentally I didn't like over panic, and I think that really helped. But then also I guess, and then talking about Antarctica, so I was actually quite lucky, our main sponsor Salomon, I've been quite involved with their research and development team from quite early on. So I actually went to their HQ in Annecy, and they actually had a cold chamber there where I could actually test some prototype gear and figure out exactly what areas of my body got affected. So like my hands and my extremities, my ears, and my face got really cold. So I could so they kind of designed specific gear like specifically for that and could test it there. So yeah, having kind of those facilities available have really helped. But then I guess also stuff like training for altitude and stuff like that, living in Cape Town is relatively difficult. I have had the use of an altitude chamber, which I find really helps. But I think the biggest thing is if you can actually get out to altitude beforehand. So like when I ran the Leadville 100 miler, I actually spent, I think it was 6 weeks out in Leadville. And even now, like kind of running in Europe, try to get out there for as long as possible. So, yeah, I think with the racing, I've been lucky to also kind of spend time in really cool places. And I think there's like 6 weeks like spent in Leadville, like I really feel like you become a part of the town and you get to gain some really cool experiences through doing stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. And I hear that is one hell of a race too. It might be the hardest of the 100 milers. Is that, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I think everything's like relative. I always like kind of hesitant to say something's the hardest. Definitely like
right.
The altitude factor is massive. I think is really challenging. And then also, yeah, as I say, I think you'll speak to like a European trail runner or an ultra runner, and you'll tell him the course is flat and it's very runnable, and he'll be like, no, that's really hard. But put him into a mountain, and he'll say that's easy. Where I guess if you come from South Africa or kind of the US or Canada, it'll probably be the other way around. Like if it's a really mountainous course, generally kind of we find that hard. But if it's more runnable, it's easy. So I guess it's, as you say, it's all up to kind of perception, I guess, how hard you have to push during the race. But I first did, or Leadville was my first 100 miler and definitely kind of one of the toughest races I've done. I guess also being my first 100 miler, I just remember the last 40 Ks, my quads were just so destroyed. Like kind of running flats and uphills were okay, but running downhills was just like, felt like impossible. I remember even the next day going up to prize giving. I literally had to basically crawl up on stage. My legs were just so blown.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. And did you win it the first time you raced it?
Yeah. So yeah, I guess I got lucky then and won it first time out.
Amazing.
So yeah, it was pretty cool experience. And as I say, I think it helped. Say spending six weeks out there at altitude, and also again just familiarizing yourself with the course and really kind of, I guess, like making it feel like home. I think with ultras, that the kind of mental side of things is so important. So kind of the more kind of advantage mentally you can give yourself, the more it helps you for the race.
For sure. I mean, it must be, you mentioned like getting sponsors and stuff, like that must be paramount in like in a ultra marathon runner's success with all like the travel and to get to these big races. So clearly, you know, you mentioned Solomon, I know you're with Red Bull, like they saw some potential in you. When did you start to see the potential in yourself or understand that you had like a future in this sport and you could go pro?
Yeah, it's, as you said, like I've been really lucky to be like aligned with some awesome partners. I call them dream givers, and like Salomon and Red Bull and like Oakley and the guys. I've been with them for kind of basically since the start. So yeah, I guess going back kind of to Gobi and Sahara, I think it was like after Sahara, like I thought like flip, okay, maybe this is the second race I've won, maybe like it wasn't just a fluke and I can actually do this, and spending some time around Dean Karnazes. And I think it was like after that I kind of mentally wanted to kind of, yeah, make the kind of transition from or into trying to be a full-time professional athlete. So I think it was probably after Sahara that I saw some potential. And then afterwards in 2009 when kind of a few more races went pretty well, and got some sponsors on board. I think from there onwards, it just kind of everything started to click and to kick into gear.
Yeah, that's very impressive what you're doing, and to be this long in the sport too, and you're still like ultra competitive. It's like it's super impressive. Would you say like the training, like training for that distance, like how do you measure like volume versus intensity? And like, do you do mostly all trails or do you do road as well? Like, what's the balance in your training routine? And like when you're training that for that long, cause I guess you could agree that over the years, trail running and ultra marathoning has gotten a lot faster.
Yeah. So I think like you said, I think that like there are two parts to this. I think one also, I guess like for me, it's always been about like longevity and trying to maximize like what I'm doing, because I really enjoy it. So like it's been sad to like see some guys are like really good for like 2 or 3 years and then they just kind of disappear off the scene. So I've always believed in being like a bit more conservative with my mileage. And even I think it was like 2014, I really overdid things. And 2015, I had mononucleosis and like I think a bit of early signs of overtraining, and I was really struggling. So I think it was ever since then I actually kind of have actually dropped my mileage down. But generally, I try and be like more consistent in my training. So probably run anything from kind of 12 to 15 or kind of 17 hours a week of running. But then I do quite a lot of mobility and strength work, probably 2 to 3 sessions a week. And then like a lot of mobility stuff, I'm getting quite a lot of massages and kind of chiro and lino therapy, just to kind of really look after my body. And I think that's really helped. But then, yeah, I guess looking at my training, I try and like generally try and get a 6 to 8 week, like big volume block in before a 100 miler, but anything out from that, I try and just really be consistent. And when I talk about like a high volume block of training, I guess that'll be anything kind of up to 20 hours, sometimes like 25 hours if I'm kind of really doing some long stuff. But yeah, I guess also in that block of training, I try and be as race specific as possible and mimic the race conditions as much as possible, which I think is really important. But then like when I'm out of that block of training, I think I do focus on a number of other elements of training, just trying to kind of improve myself and become a better athlete. And I'd say probably on average, I only do about one training session a week on the road. Currently doing a lot more because in South Africa, we not allowed to run on the mountains yet and in the parks. So yeah, doing lots of stuff on the road. But I think it's good for your body to give it lots of different kind of stress it in different ways. So kind of now I feel like I'm getting some good training on the road. I wouldn't like to kind of have to do it for too much longer, but I think it's good. And then at times also like doing some like really big high volume training in big mountains. I do enjoy kind of mixing things up. As I say, like I've done some multi-stage racing, I've done some kind of 50 milers, 100 milers, some kind of 100k races, even like something like a Red Bull 400 where you're running up a ski slope, or kind of I think it was Red Bull K3 in Italy where you kind of climb 3,000 meters in 10Ks. I think it's important to keep mixing things up in training, and then also just like mix things up with a couple of adventures in between. Like kind of I've done stuff like running the Greater Malaya Trail with my friend Reno, and then also like Drakensberg Traverse, or just I guess getting out there and what I mentioned earlier on, just kind of also kind of just exploring the kind of that adventure side of things.
For sure, you got to keep it fun, right? Like, it's you're when you're doing 20 hours a week. Do you measure everything in hours or in kilometers mostly? Because you hear a lot of runners, you know, marathoners. Oh, I get up, you know, they maybe do 100 miles a week or whatever. In your like ultra marathoning, is it more? Do you measure things more in time?
I've kind of gone through phases. I want to say like if I was training for Western States and Leadville, I definitely do look at I would say like my main gauge is hours, but I also do look at the kilometers. And in my head, like I know I want to say hit 140 kilometers in a certain amount of hours a week or 100 miles a week. So I do that. Whereas if it's something like kind of Ultra Trail Mont Blanc or a much more like mountainous race, then, or if it's like a project where you know you're just going to be out there, then potentially look at hours and vertical gain in a week. So again, I mix it up a bit. I think in my like early training, I definitely did a lot more just purely on hours, and I kind of figured out or kind of the coach who was coaching me at the time was basically kind of, maybe you'll run 30Ks in 3 hours to start off, but then as you get fitter, maybe it'll be 35Ks in 3 hours. So generally, your volume of training will pick up anyway. But yeah, I kind of have mixed it up a bit.
Very cool. I was doing some research on you, and back in 2011, it was Bruce Fortis that wrote you to a future Western state champ. Like, that's a pretty bold statement back then. And then you raced it in 2012, and I watched a little video of you that's on the Red Bull site, actually, and that it was like a perfect day for you that you raced. And can you tell us a bit about, like, about that whole experience? And because, you know, for anybody who's, I mean, in the running world, I think everyone knows what Western States is, and it's kind of this iconic race, and I think it's pretty cool that you've actually won it.
Yeah, geez, I think for me, kind of, like, I guess, kind of getting into the sport, you reborn to run, and kind of, for me, like, when I first got into the sport, like, Leadville was the 100-miler, and then I think as you get a little bit more, like, into the sport, you kind of realize that kind of, I guess, kind of, for me, like, Western States was the 100-miler, like, being the original 100-miler, and going there and running it in 2012, and as you say, for me, that's still, like, the most perfect 100-miler I had. Just everything seemed to click, but Timothy Olsen was just one step better on the day. But yeah, like, it just went perfectly. And to be honest, I guess it went, like, so perfectly, I thought I'd come back a year later and just kind of be able to go one better, and got injured, and, like, had one or two kind of, I think it was, I missed 2013, I then missed the race, and 2014 I was there, but I'd kind of, it was the tail end of, I'd just done way too much, and then 2015 got sick, and I think 2016 I decided, like, cool, this is it, like, I'm not gonna go back. And then I ended up coming back in 2017. And yeah, kind of Bruce Fortis in South Africa is a legend, or I guess globally as well, having won the Comrades Ultramarathon 9 times. Mm. I remember he wrote that in the book, and then I kind of forgot about it. And then I was rereading the book, or a couple of chapters was one of Tim Noakes's book, and then I kind of stumbled across that in the front of the book. And then I was just, yeah, I think that really motivated me in 2017, like, that I had to get this right, just, like, by him making such a bold statement and being such an iconic person in South Africa and in endurance sports globally. So yeah, to come back in 2017 and to kind of, yeah, to, I wouldn't say it was my, like, kind of best performance, but definitely best race I've ever run. And just in terms of the end result, having to, like, finally won Western States, had my wife and son there, my mom there, it was just really cool, lots of kind of close friends. So yeah, I guess if I look back at Western States, that year definitely stands out. And as you mentioned, it was quite a journey, like, kind of starting in 2012 and kind of going all the way along until 2017. And for me, like, Western States is the ultimate race. It's still kind of my favorite 100-miler. It's just, yeah, I guess such an amazing vibe and atmosphere, and just the community there is so cool.
Did you know, like, where you stood in the ranking before you towed the line there? Because, I mean, it brings out the best ultra trail runners in the world, I'd say. One of them being Jim Walmsley, who's won it now the last 2 years. But, you know, does that motivate you? Does that scare you? What's that like?
Yeah, I think for me, like, when I have my best races, is just trying to focus on me and trying to get to the finish line as quick as I can. And even as I mentioned, like, going into the Gobi Desert race, I think I'm very competitive, but I think it's more so with myself, trying to bring the best out of me. I kind of find if I kind of worry too much about the people around me, I don't tend to race well, and you end up trying to run their race. I know going into the race in 2017, because 2016 I wasn't there, and obviously 2016 was when Jim came onto the scene and got lost, and then 2017 was kind of dubbed to be, like, his year, and that he was gonna kind of set the race alight and smash the course record. So I knew if he was gonna run the times he wanted to run, I probably wasn't gonna be up there with him. But I guess kind of towing the line, and then, like, finding myself in second position behind him after about 20 miles or so. I think I was more so just like really focused on my own race. He was like way ahead by then. I think even coming into Forest Hill, which is a 100K mark, I think he was nearly an hour ahead of me, which is like crazy for like after 100Ks. But I'd kind of got reports along the way that I knew he wasn't doing that him well. Or in terms, I knew he like threw up at Forest Hill, and even one of the first aid stations, he was sitting down, and he changed changed shoes. I kind of picked up that like he was really pushing hard, and then I was just trying to like be as comfortable as possible. But like when someone's an hour ahead of you, like you're not even thinking about racing. Like I realized he was really gonna have to spectacularly blow up for me to catch him, which lucky for me, he did end up kind of going through a really rough patch, and it was quite crazy. Like from Forest Hill, you kind of run along the river, like the Cal Loop that they call it, and kind of came into an aid station. They were like, he's 40 minutes ahead, but he was like 60 minutes ahead, like 10 k's ago, and then suddenly the next aid station, they're like, he's just left the aid station. I was like, geez, how like. I'm really catching, like it just doesn't make sense. And then obviously when I passed him and he was walking, I realized things had really taken a turn for the worse. But I guess going back to the race and any race, I do try and like focus on my own race. But I guess like having said that, as you mentioned, that the sport is changing and evolving that the whole time. I think traditionally for a 100K race, and even like a 100-mile race, you could really get away with running your own race, whereas now you do actually have to focus. Like if you want to be up there and win or get a podium, I think you do have to focus a little bit more on what's happening around you. I've definitely noticed that over the past couple of years, because guys are going out so fast, and I guess it's like throwing 10 eggs against the wall, like two or three don't break, and those are the guys that have really good performances. So I guess the kind of attrition rate is a lot higher now. You do see a lot more DNFs, but I think it's because the sport like is evolving, like guys are really pushing themselves, and they kind of like someone like Jim Walmsley, who's kind of really set the bar really high. He's kind of gone out there and kind of almost approached a 100-mile race as what you'd approach a 50-miler race and go for it from the start, which maybe kind of 6 or 7 years ago people didn't do. So yeah, it's been really cool to see how the sport is evolving.
Yeah, for sure. How are you adapting to those changes, and like do you like where it's going? Does that excite you?
Yeah, I think because it's pushing the level of the sport. I think for me it does make it quite difficult in some ways, and I'm traditionally probably a slower start, and I like to kind of run through the race during the or kind of finish stronger. You definitely have to have like I guess a lot more like belief in yourself when you see guys are really going out fast in the early stages, or you have to kind of push yourself a little bit harder, which is kind of I guess has worked in my favor at times, and also against me, because I guess if you go out too hard in a 100-miler, the last part of it can be really difficult. But I think it's cool, it's mixing the sport, and the times are getting faster, and I think it's really exciting.
That's great. Do you it is definitely very exciting, and it's awesome to see the times continues to come down, but like especially in a race of that distance, you think like the 250-kilometer races are helping you with the 100-milers as well?
Yeah, definitely. Like I haven't done too many of the kind of multi-day races. I almost kind of did like 2 or 3 years of multi-day races and the 250-kilometer races, and then off that focused more on the one day kind of 50-miler to 100-mile distance races. But I think kind of, definitely like those early years of doing kind of the multi-day races and the 250-kilometer races definitely did help me with the 100-mile races. I think they've definitely been like really beneficial. And as I say, I think it's also cool to mix things up a lot. and also like do a couple of kind of projects or adventures where you're kind of going out there and spending long days on your legs and getting stronger. Obviously, I guess there is the risk of, I know when I did the Greater Malaya Trail in 2018, the rest of my year from a racing perspective was just a mess. Like I was completely flat. We ran 1,600 Ks over 24 days, or something like that, which, was, pretty crazy and just tough mentally and physically. So yeah, it does take a lot, out of you. So I guess it's trying to find that balance and also mix things up a bit.
Cool. And I know a lot of it's the training that goes into it, but it's also mentally challenging for races this distance. I think that's what blows my mind more than anything. It's like, how are you out there for that long running at that, these challenging courses? So how do you work the mental game and how do you work it in a race? Get your mind into a positive state when maybe you're having negative thoughts, or how do you maneuver that?
Yeah, I think it's the mental side of things is so big, and if I look back to some of my DNFs and when things have gone pear-shaped, I often want to say almost feel like I kind of started to lose it mentally, and I feel if you lose it mentally, physically, then you also lose it. I think for me, 100 mile or anything long, I always try and break it down into bite-sized chunks. And maybe I even know when I did the home run, the 100 mile around my home, I broke it down into 4 40K sections, kind of 4 marathons basically. And then just trying to tick one of those off at a time. And then I break it down even smaller, I just broke it down to 5 and 10K segments in between this, just so mentally it was more achievable. Cause I think I think anyone, even myself, if you say, cool, tomorrow you're going to run 100 miles, I'll be flip. It's mentally it's too overwhelming. But if you tell yourself, I'm going to run 4 40Ks, runs, and you kind of break that down, it just feels you can actually get through it. And for a long 100 miler, kind of just focus on getting from one aid station to the next. And also if you're having a bad patch, I always find it quite interesting, you get to an aid station, you refuel, and then I almost tell myself cool, that section's over, that race is done, you're starting afresh now, and let's kind of go. And you almost feel a lot better. So I think just also, as you mentioned, I think it's so important just to keep that keep mentally positive. And I guess also just for me, that's, I think, I love running on the trails. It's just kind of focusing on the natural environment and trying to, I guess, zone out a bit and get into my own headspace. And I guess just also remember why I'm doing this. You probably all ultra runners are the same. They kind of enjoy a bit of the pain and suffering. And I guess it's just how you mentally approach that. If you're gonna see kind of the pain and suffering you're gonna go through in a negative way, then things probably aren't gonna go well. It's weird. Some of the races I've done the best, and it's almost before the race you actually almost look forward to kind of really burying yourself and kind of really pushing yourself. And I think even the home run, mentally when it got really tough in the kind of final 30Ks. I think there's something kind of quite special about just kind of really emptying the tank, which kind of makes ultra running so intriguing. So yeah, I think there is a big mental element and trying to stay positive and just really breaking the race down into bite size chunks is a big help. I guess something the Greater Malaya Trail, when you're running for so many days consecutively, that is really tough, because just everything becomes about moving forward. Even sleeping at night, you don't want to sleep too long because you need to get up and just keep moving forward. So that was tricky, just mentally. And kind of, I think with a 100 miler or a race, even if it's multi-day, you're going to kind of get through it in a couple of days. But something the Himalayas, it's just, it's so long, the end is just not in sight. Made it made it really like mentally tough. And yeah, we had like quite a few kind of crazy experiences. We started and there was like a really late winter, so like we had to like go over a lot of passes which actually no one had gone over that year yet. The navigation was really tricky because everything was iced in and snowed in, so and you couldn't get it wrong because like in the Himalayas when you going over 5,000 meter plus mountains, you get stuck in the wrong valley and that's the end of you. So it was pretty frightening at times, and that was all like during the first couple of days, and we realized like we still had like another 26 days or so to go. And then Reno, the guy I was doing it with, got frostbite, picked up a couple of injuries. And then even towards the end when we kind of thought everything was fine, we got chased by a couple of local guys one night, but like through the mountains. No. And it got pretty serious. Like they kind of like ambushed us once or twice, and you're like in the middle of nowhere. So yeah, I think just like mentally, like after doing something like that, you're just like completely fried. It was quite weird though, like kind of because like physically I felt like I was almost getting stronger during the run, and I almost like now I just think it's an absolute stupid idea, but like, I had these stupid ideas of like 3 weeks off the run, maybe I'll go jump into like a 50-mile race. I'm going to be really strong. I've just kind of had an amazing block of training. I've been like running over 5,500 meter peaks. I'm going to be golden. And then, just everything crashes once you finish.
Unbelievable. That's crazy. Like when you're going through something like that, like clearly you have a thing for dangerous things too, right? Like this is, you know, they're challenging events, but you like the adrenaline, it seems, of racing. Has having a kid maybe changed your mindset a little bit?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think like the Himalayas was, I don't know, like when Rain and I like wanted to go and run the Himalayas or do the Great Himalaya Trail, I think you always kind of, you like see these like white, like snowy capped mountains, and you get these like romantic ideas of this adventure. It's just going to be one like epic adventure. And then I guess you get there and like straight from the get-go, you're kind of getting in planes that are pretty sketchy. We had to get like a ride in a local truck through this pass where actually like halfway along the drive, it was like late at night. I actually like I was sitting in the front. I kind of regretted calling shotgun a couple of k's into the drive, because the guy was literally like every couple hundred meters he was nearly driving off the side of the road. Like I thought once or twice the wheels of the truck had gone off the road, and it was a couple of thousand meter drop on the other side. So like when you're in moments like that, when you kind of see your life kind of flashing before your eyes, you definitely like, I kind of realized there that like this is like a bit stupid. There's one thing to like, I guess what you do, like being in the mountains, there is always that risk element. But to take like, I guess risks, like where you're kind of really pushing that the envelope, I definitely not like overly keen on that. Like I loved or kind of the running the Himalayas was an amazing experience. And like the pinnacle adventure of my life, but I probably wouldn't go back and do it again purely because I think kind of like, I remember like Max was still like a young baby, my son, then, and I just like felt, yeah, really, really guilty a lot of the time. Every time you're in this crazy like situation, it's really dangerous. You like think like, what am I doing here? It's just, this is basically purely for personal gain. I don't want Max to grow up without a father. So yeah, I think I've definitely kind of changed things. But then again, kind of went and did a project along the Skeleton Coast in Namibia last year, and still finishing it off. And what should have been relatively straightforward also ended up getting a bit sketchy. So I think it's like, I guess with the nature of things, you're always gonna kind of end up in certain situations, and you can't wrap yourself in cotton wool. But I think, yeah, being a dad has definitely kind of changed my thinking, and definitely am a little bit more cautious now.
When you say sketchy, what happened there? I mean, I'm thinking about my cushy marathons. You know, I ran Boston a few times, and like there is no danger there, you know, other than maybe extreme weather conditions, but marathon distance.
Yeah, so I can't give away too much stuff because actually Red Bull is still doing a kind of we're still like hoping to finish up. But basically, yeah, I took a bit of a wrong turn into quite a sensitive area that was kind of a military area, and things escalated very, very quickly. It's quite a sensitive area, and I had I was running with GoPros, and I had a spot tracking device, and also two-way radio to get in touch with my crew. And even the GoPro, it was the GoPro Fusion or one of the latest GoPros. So it looked like the guys just like freaked out when they kind of thought I was shouldn't be there. So it just got heated quite quickly, but luckily I managed by pure chance, get in touch with my crew, because the two-way radio, you had to be had to be within a 2 or 3 K radius, which they weren't. But luckily my spot device could actually send them a message, and they were in signal at the time. So it worked out in my favor. But yeah, I guess it's those like things that you think should be straightforward, and things can escalate quite quickly.
For sure. How would you say, to maybe just touch on this quickly, like I know a lot goes into it, like training, and we talked about mental. For nutrition, how do you make sure you're fueled properly, whether it's for a race or an adventure? Did you have a general rule, maybe calories per hour or like types of food that are good? Because if you don't fuel properly, you can get in a bit of a sticky situation that then you can't even perform, you know?
Yeah, and it's quite an interesting thing. Like I always say up until doing the Great Himalaya Trail, I had like a kind of cast iron stomach. I could like literally throw whatever I wanted in there. And I think for me, like the more calories you can get in, or the more calories your body kind of absorbs, it the better. And I think for me, like kind of getting lots of goo roctanes and stuff like really, really helped. And I used that a lot. But it was kind of after the Himalayas that I battled with stomach issues, and I got some testing done. I think just with kind of running for 24 plus days and just in the Himalayas, just at times would get like proper meals, but a lot of the time was just like really kind of junk, kind of sugary bars or whatever you could get your hands on we would be eating. And I think that definitely messed up my stomach. So I've started switching to like eating some more like whole foods now, and even stuff like kind of bone broth and some whole foods. But like having said that, like I've been experimenting a bit with it, you still can't beat just getting like, I kind of find that I really do need to like still get in, especially when you're like racing more high intensity, kind of getting in the gels and stuff like that, like really helps. But I guess if I look back to say the last kind of 100 miler such, I did a home run. I had quite a combination of, I was actually testing out some sandwiches, some bone broth. Going through the second night, I actually used a lot of Red Bull, and I normally use that kind of the second half of 100 miler just to kind of stay a bit more alert, mix that with water. And then I also, I used some Spring Energy gels as well, some fruit, and then some electrolytes and a bit of some kind of whole foods as well. So currently I'm actually doing quite a lot of like experimenting and actually just trying to figure out what works for me again. And I think it's quite important like lesson for anyone. Like I think as I've gone through my career, like you find things that work for like 2 or 3 years and then it stops working. You got to keep like evolving the whole time, but also like what works for me isn't necessarily going to work for you. So I think it's really important to test out what works for you. And I think I was listening to a Jason Koop podcast the other day, and it's quite important that he was saying like he gets these athletes on their long runs to actually like fuel with their race nutrition and get in as many calories, because you said like how many calories do you get in during a kind of a race. And I guess often in training you're kind of maybe getting in 100 calories an hour because your body's not that depleted on a long run, but then suddenly you go into like a race and you expect you want your body to absorb like 200 calories an hour, and then after 6 hours your whole gut packs up and you wonder why. So I think it's important going back to actually in your long runs, if you're going to want to get down 200 calories an hour, 250 calories an hour, to actually train like that and get that in and actually train with your race nutrition. Like, it's important to train your gut as well. So yeah, I guess for me, I'm trying to also, in the process of just in my general diet and nutrition, just trying to look after my gut a bit more. I guess having done this for 13 years, maybe I'm not as bulletproof as I used to be. But then also, I think it's important to also train your gut, and you also do want to be quite robust. Like, I think if you, like, you do to a point have to be able to, like, there are times at the end of a 100 mile or a long race, like, where you're just kind of shoveling down whatever you can get in, and I think that's important for ultra running, to be able to get in those calories.
Well, what's your go-to for a post race?
Go-to post race, definitely. Yeah, I'd say a hamburger or a pizza would be definitely up there on the list. Maybe both if it's been a really long race.
Why not? You were given some great advice by Dean Karnazes early in your career. What could you get? What advice would you give, like, a younger version of yourself now, learning everything you've learned?
Yeah, I guess probably, like, kind of go out there and take chances when you're young. I guess a lot of people, and I guess with a lot of stuff, like, I think a lot of people are like, kind of, what happens if I fail? But I think in order to achieve stuff, you're going to have to fail a number of times along the way. And even, like, with the goals you set, like, I think set challenging goals, like, rather not achieve your goal, but kind of maybe achieve something slightly less, but it's still of a higher standard, and just kind of go out there and push yourself. But also, I think enjoy yourself along the way. I definitely, if I look back in my career, maybe there were times where you're just too fixated on results, or not like celebrating the results enough. It's like you kind of do well at a race and you're like, cool, what's next? Instead of just kind of sitting back and enjoying the moments a little bit. So I think it's important just to kind of take time and kind of enjoy the moment. And I think that's why, I guess, in kind of the positives I see from lockdown, I think it's kind of helped me be a little bit more present again, and just kind of simplify things, which kind of obviously haven't, like, enjoyed the overall experience of not being able to go into the mountains and travel and stuff. But I think just kind of living a more simple life is definitely, I think it's just made me realize what's important in life.
Awesome. What would you say running means to you?
Yeah, I guess running for me is more than just, like, I wouldn't just see it as a sport. It's a way of life. And for me, like the day I kind of stop enjoying running, I'll stop competing. For me, I still want to be able to be like 60, 70 years old, 60, 70 years old, and kind of go and run on Table Mountain or wherever I'm living, or kind of, if I'm not able to run, kind of get the hiking poles out and go for a hike. I think for me, kind of, yeah, running's like more than just a kind of sport.
Hmm. That's awesome. Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, you've been doing it for such a long time, and you're certainly very good at it, and you have quite a long list of races that you've completed. So I think the lesson that you were saying about, you know, trying things and don't be scared to fail is certainly one that I can definitely relate to.
I think it's like, I think if I look back at my career now, it's probably, it sucks at the time, but it's like when you have those really big setbacks or failures, it's kind of when you learn the most about yourself. I know it's quite cliched, but it is true in a way. I think when, like, everything's going well, it is nice, but you're not really kind of pushed as much as what you are when you have a major setback.
Mm. I liked what you said too in that video for Western States, that if you had won it in 2012, then you maybe you wouldn't have had the experience that you had over the 5 years bringing you to the win in 2017, which is I thought was really interesting for sure.
Yeah, no, exactly. As I say, it's even like a few years ago, I wrote a book, and I think writing the book was quite interesting in a way, just kind of like unpacking everything, and actually made me realize that, like, some of my, like, bigger, like, achievements, or what people would see as achievements, actually weren't that big or important to me. And like even, I don't know, I guess looking back, if you say like what's your proudest race win, it was probably the K4 search and rescue dog race that I ran with my dog, and just kind of, yeah, being able to kind of like share that experience with her and kind of running 4Ks with her, and kind of I still got the picture of us kind of afterwards, and you could almost see she had a massive smile on her face. So I think it's just often like those smaller things that like actually mean the most to you.
It's the shortest distance and your fondest memory. That's awesome. I quite like to do 4Ks with my dog too. So that's it's always a good time. So with all the closures and all the cancellations and everything, what's the next thing for you, and what's in your future?
Yeah, so kind of just this week, my big focus for the year was going to be Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, which has been cancelled. So currently there's Ultra Trail Cape Town, which is on the Ultra Trail World Tour, which is on my back doorstep. So like ideally I wouldn't have to travel anywhere for it to happen. But I think there's so many uncertainties, like most races seem quite unpredictable. Like even with us, we like obviously we're not allowed to have any mass participation events yet and stuff like that. So I think we're still quite a long way off, unfortunately, from events. So playing things by ear. There's a 100-miler on Reunion Island, which is fairly close. If our borders open up, maybe I can get there. But like kind of working on the Namibia project along the Skeleton Coast that I mentioned to you. So I'm hoping to get back there. Luckily, obviously, it's not a race or a mass participation event, so we'll be able to go back there. I'm just waiting for kind of borders to open up, and then we just have to sort out permits and stuff like that. So currently that's kind of my kind of major focus. But otherwise, yeah, currently just kind of getting in some training. And yeah, I think I've used like lockdown period to do, like when we actually weren't allowed to leave our properties, I was doing, like as I mentioned earlier, actually wasn't doing a lot of running. I was doing like a lot of strength work and just trying to get stronger. And then now we're only allowed to run on the road, so doing a bit more kind of road stuff. So I guess just using this period to try and improve myself as an athlete. So hopefully, like when we are able to get back out there and run and to be able to race, that hopefully I can be a bit stronger.
And I'm sure the road training is going to add a different kind of fitness to you as well, I think.
Yeah, I think it's great for trail running, getting like the cadence up and being able to run a bit faster. Luckily, where I live, like it's quite pretty around here. But I've actually really enjoyed it. Like it's been nice to mix it up, and it's, I think once you kind of get into a bit of a groove, like on the road, it is cool. And I'd love to at some stage train for like a road marathon and just, yeah, race it. I think it's something really like an intriguing and something cool to do. So as I mentioned earlier, it is cool to mix it up a bit.
Is for all the races that you've done and you know, you've won some of the biggest races out there, is there a race that you still have on your bucket list that you haven't done yet that you'd like to?
Yes, I guess probably like Ultra Trail Mont Blanc is definitely the one the one race that I feel has eluded me. I've been there a couple of times, but I've just never been able to string it together. And as I mentioned, this year I really wanted to put a big focus on it. So yeah, I think it'll be a big focus for me next year to try and get it right there. So that's a really big race for me, and kind of, as I say, I feel like kind of one that I haven't been able to have a good race there. And then also I guess a race like the Hard Rock 100 would be amazing to be able to get into in Colorado. I've been there back in 2011 to pace Julien Chaurier from the Salomon team, where he was back then, and it was just absolutely mind-blowing, the course. So that would be pretty cool to get to. Otherwise, I suppose, I've been pretty lucky and been able to do like quite a few crazy races. But I'm also enjoying doing quite a few like kind of like FKT projects and running at adventures as well. So I've got a couple of those I'd love to do as well. So yeah, I guess still quite a lot more running to be done.
Amazing. Well, hopefully we can get you out to Ultra Trail Huracana one of these days. We have a 100 miler in Charlevoix, Quebec, which is close to home.
Yeah, I've actually heard lots about it. I know it's on the Ultra Trail World Tour, I think. So
yeah,
I think it's coming up now in September.
In September, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But it's quite a tough one, from what I hear. So
yeah,
like I said, I only did the 65, and that was plenty challenging for me, coming from a road background. But so, where can people find out more about you? Where can people find your book? Maybe you have I know you have a website, Instagram, stuff like that.
Yeah, so I'm on kind of Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Ryan Sands, and then Sands SANDES, so it's like Sanders, and then also yeah, got a website, RyanSands.com, and then yeah, through my website you can see links to get my book, or if you go into Amazon and get the online book on there, and the, yeah, all the links on there. So yeah, pretty active on social media. So yeah, please follow me on there.
Amazing. Well, we can't wait to see what your next exciting adventure is up to, and which hopefully you get to race again soon, hopefully Mont Blanc. But thanks so much for coming on the show today and chatting with us. It's super interesting to hear how much you've accomplished and like your world travels, and yeah, we wish you all the best and stay safe.
Thanks so much. Yeah, it's been great chatting, and yeah, hopefully I get to Canada sooner than later.
Yeah, it'd be great to catch up.
For sure.
Take care.
Cheers.
This episode is brought to you by the WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. But seeing as we can't do that in person right now, let's try our best to stay connected through social media. How can you do that? Every Monday, we'll connect through a virtual run. You can go out there at any time of the day and run any distance you choose. When you get home, share your run with us on Instagram by tagging at WRGRuns, and we'll post it in our stories for everyone to see. It's a tough time for everyone, so hopefully this helps us stay motivated to get out there and keep moving. If you want to learn more, visit our website, imarunner.ca, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Hope to see you all soon. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi, and hosted by Justin Pugliese.